This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. We have a kind of a different show tonight. I've talked about business before, and this is going to be a little bit different, but I'm supposed to be in Little Valley this weekend. and I didn't get to make it, and I'm not used to not showing up at shows, and I called and told folks, and it was, you know, disappointing all the way around. And if you went up there to meet me, I greatly apologize. But believe it or not, I do have a pretty good excuse, and it's embarrassing, but just so you know what it takes to keep me from going to a convention, you'll know what it is. When I got back from the NTA show, I was taking some stuff out of the van, and somehow I've got my feet tangled. The next thing I know, I'm grasping for air. I hit the bumper dead center of my chest on my van, and then I slammed to the ground. And what I did is I broke three ribs right when my ribs come together. And for about a week, I just tried to tough it out. And the longer it went, before I went to the doctor and got some pain medicine, there was no way I could drive 12 hours up there, do a show, and drive 12 hours back. I can't bend over. I can't pick nothing up. I'm probably be way too grumpy after driving 12 hours. Nobody want to be around me. And it just didn't work out. So broke bones is the reason that I didn't make it to Little Valley. But saying that, I was going to give a demo on making a living full-time trapping. And I'm going to go over the notes that I had on tonight's radio show. So if you were planning on going to Little Valley and you went and you wanted that information, I'm going to give it to you right now. Excuse me. Right now. That way, that's just my way of trying to make up for not going up there. Now, if you're, I've been getting several comments and emails, which I always do, about big pans, where do I get them, yada, yada, yada. So if you're one of those guys that's looking for the big pans, if you call Jeb at Oki Cable and Trap Supply, he's got those pans, I believe, from Chip, or we'll be getting them soon. And he's one of the sponsors. You'll see his link with his phone number and everything down in the show notes. So if you want those big pans, give him a call. And for anybody out there that doesn't know, I've talked a lot about portable pockets, how excited I've been about it, how well they've been working. Well, I've got a DVD out now, and it's just called Portable Pockets. You can pick it up on my store. A lot of the other dealers are getting it now. And it's 2 hours of how to catch a coyote with the same equipment that you can go catch a coon with, then a bobcat, then a muskrat, then a mink, then a beaver, and an otter. It's a really cool system. I'm very proud of the video because, especially on the coyote side, once you get a grasp on what the portable pocket is and how cool it is, you never have to fear the rain again. No more washed out dirt holes, none of that type stuff. You can actually set these portable pockets and have other trappers walk right past you and never know you've got a trap set. I mean, it's definitely elevating the game of predator trapping with these portable pockets. Last thing is, if you haven't seen Trapping TV, you can go to my channel on YouTube. It's Wolfer Nation, and then you'll see Trapping TV, and there's 13 episodes, and they are really neat. There's five of us. We go around doing what we do. We film a lot of it, a lot of good pointers, some education, even show Albert catching a teddy bear in a trap, all kind of weird stuff like that, plus just a lot of good information. And we also have a Trapping TV page now on Facebook, so if you'd go like that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Now, before I get in this interview, I'm going to use some examples that are sexual in nature. So if that's going to offend you, you might want to go and turn off the show. The reason I'm doing that is I know that 99% of the people that listen to this are guys. And I'm using these examples to get a point across where there's no confusion whatsoever, because they're serious points for anybody that's thinking about being a full-time trapper. And the concept, the only way I can really get it to where I think it's got enough punch to get through, guys, is to use these. There may be a few bad words in this one, whatever. You know, I'm a little high from narcotics they gave me, so there's no telling what I'm going to say. So I'm just warning you, because these are not scripted. But if you've got little kids or whatever, or you're going to get offended if I say the word masturbation, then you need to get off the channel right now. But for everybody else, it's not just to be a potty mouth, but it's two examples, the only ones I can find, that really, really emphasize what it is. I'm going to be extremely brutal and honest during this show, way more than normal, because if someone's thinking about full-time, that is a very serious decision that can not only affect you, it can affect your family, it can affect your credit, your house, your trucks, everything can decide on if you make it or not. Some guys are made to make a full-time living at trapping, and some guys just aren't. That's just the way it is. There's guys that are good enough to be in the NFL, and no matter how bad those other college kids wants to go, they're just not going to be there. Not that they're bad guys, not that they're lesser guys. There's just a level of performance and a mindset to be an NFL player or a NBA player or whatever you call baseball, whatever that's called, the professional baseball players. There's, you know, not everybody's going to make it, and it doesn't make you any less of a person if you don't do it. Well, I'm going to start off with fantasy. And this is where I believe a lot of guys get really confused. And I've learned over time, guys. I've gave a lot of instruction to a lot of different people. And I've also given a lot of business instruction to a lot of different people. And one thing that's became clear to me over time is my mind and the way that I think, and since I've already made a living trapping, you know, from just fur or from fur and the fur industry, I just, automatically think that anybody can do it. If I can, anybody can, because there's nothing special about Clint, nothing whatsoever. So if I can do it, anybody else can do it. And I've gave instructions to several people. Some have went on to be full-time trappers and, you know, have a great life from it. And some people, it has destroyed their life. They just weren't ready. They weren't mentally capable of being their own boss, or they didn't understand the difference between production and being busy. I really don't know what it is, but I do know after some business planning, you give someone a business model, you show them how to do it, the numbers work out, they think they can, but then when life and everything smacks you around a little bit, it falls to the wayside and all of a sudden you're in trouble. So the fantasy of what it is and what it is two different things. Now we're going to be doing our next show is going to be with Dustin Drews from South Dakota. And he's a full-time trapper now for South Dakota. And the reality of being full-time is a lot different than being a hobby trapper, which you will hear in that interview. So don't think that I'm just kind of making this up. But the fantasy of being a full-time trapper, I mean, if you've ever read some of Craig's books or some of the books written in the 80s, I mean, you know, when they're writing, very creative writers, you know, you can smell the cool mornings and you can smell the fox and you get all wrapped up into what's going on and you start visualizing and fantasizing about what it would be like to be doing that and going out and making your living as a trapper. When you catch yourself thinking about that and you start thinking, well, that, you know, all the cool stuff about being a full-time trapper, the big catches, going out of state, all this type of thing. Guys, that is trapping mental masturbation is what that is. Because it's not real. When you're in the act of being with yourself, thinking about something else, it's purely fantasy. Being a full-time trapper is very hectic. It's very uncontrolled. It's very stressful. It's a lot of times you go from having money to no money in a course of a couple of weeks. It can be very rough on your family. It's extremely abusive on your body. But when you're thinking about full-time trapping, the long hours don't really seem to connect in real life. Like when you watch a movie about the SEALs or Rangers or Special Forces and it shows them going through the training, you know, and they're in the middle of Hell Week and they hadn't slept in 5 days. And they're carrying these logs around, and they're getting beat up in the surf, and they're getting hollered at, and they're running, and they're doing all these calisthenics. It's just in a guy's makeup, in the caveman side of a guy, that he's going to go, that's freaking cool, I could do that. That's mental masturbation is what that is. And when you're thinking about, because when you see it on TV, or you read about it in a book, or you hear about it on a radio show like this, or a blog, or a DVD, or whatever, everything that you see is micro. When you haven't slept in the SEALs on Hell Week for 5 days, you never slept for five, not slept for 5 days. Because normal people don't do that. You've never exercised for 20 hours a day, because normal people don't exercise for 20 hours a day with no sleep for days on end. But when you see it in short spurts, it looks kind of cool. You know, it's like the, you know, the gladiator and every guy that he thinks down there wants to come out, you know, and be on top. But in reality, it sucks. Now, I'm not saying being a full-time trapper always sucks, but there's times when it sucks. And you've got to understand that before you get started, because if you go into it totally off of fantasy of just big catches and everything else like that, I promise you, you're not going to stay in it very long, because reality is not going to be anywhere near what you thought it would be. So you kind of need to know that. You have to make a logical, critical thinking type decision before you make the jump to trapping. When I made the jump to trapping, it was foolish. I'm too hard-headed, though, to back down. I made it work. But let me tell you, there was a lot of times we had no money. You know, eating beaver was not just because I thought it tasted good, it's because I wanted to eat. It was not the best thing to do to my wife. You know, looking back on it, I should have kept the pool business, at least maybe doing liners or something like that in the summer to pad the fur money. But I had the fantasy of what full-time trapping would be. In reality, was a lot more abusive than that. So if you catch yourself fantasizing about it, you need to step back and really ask yourself some questions. Is this what I want to do all day? Now, and it brings up another good point. Guys that only get to trap before and after work on the weekends or 2 weeks vacation, yeah, they want to do it all the time. If you stuck them in a situation where it was really 60 to 90 days straight without a day off, most of them are going to be under the bed in a fetal position before that's over with, because it gets so monotonous, and you know, the excitement is not the same for a professional trapper as it is one that's a hobby trapper. And that's one aspect that's a shame about being a professional trapper. I mean, there's no way you're going to get excited over Coon 3 and Coon 1100 the same way. It's all going to start turning into work, just like a regular style job. So the fantasy part of that, guys, I'm telling you, if you catch yourself doing it, just keep in mind what you're doing. It's just mental trapping masturbation is all that it is. It's not real. You know, and it's no different than girls that try to look like girls on TV when they don't step back and think. You know, you've got a beautiful girl to start with that's got four people putting makeup on her, two people fixing her hair, someone is dressing her, they've got ultra photography equipment, fans, lights, wind, everything else to make that one picture look like that. And some girl's going to get up in the morning and think she's going to go to her bathroom by herself and look like those women. It doesn't make any sense. But they sell that to the girls. And a lot of times I think guys try to sell the appeal to fur-time trapping because it makes them feel better to other people, and it's dangerous. The right person, it's a good fit. The wrong person, it's not a very good fit. So you have to really do some soul searching before that. Is it because of fantasy you're doing it, or is it because you've actually got a plan that'll make it work that you're doing it? Another reason I think a lot of guys want to be professional trappers is solely off of ego. Ego, ego, ego. They want to be able to go to a convention and stick their chest out a little bit. I'm a professional trapper. I'm above the hobby trapper. You know, they want people to go, hey, did you see Joe over there? Man, he's going full time. He's a professional trapper now. The ego part of that is a terrible reason to go full-time trapping. Because if you are doing good, you'll find out you've got haters. if you're doing bad, you're going to have a lot of people that I told you so. So if you're doing it for outside reasons, people outside of you and your wife or your kids, a girlfriend or whatever, you're doing it for the wrong reason. And when time gets really tough, because it will, I promise you those outside reasons are not going to be enough to get you through. So if you're thinking it'd just be cool to say you're a professional trapper, you know, people recognize you, want to shake your hands, want to get your autograph, all that type of stuff. If that's the reason you want to do it, don't do it, because it's not gonna pan out for you, you know, and that's not exactly what you're looking for. Now, the other example I want to get before we get more of the details, because I want to get your mind thinking in the right place. I'm a red-blooded Appalachian male. Like sex. Love sex. Think about sex. All guys are the same. That's all you think about. If you think about anything within a 3 or 4 minutes, something sexual is going to come into your mind. If you've got any testosterone at all. That's just the way we made it. Now, as much as I like sex, there is a way to get paid to be a professional sex guy. It's called porn. But have y'all ever seen me? Just because I like it, love it, want to do it all the time, does not mean that I'm going to be in that business. One, there's more reasons, and two, look at me. It ain't going to work. So no matter how bad I wanted to do that for a profession, there's things there that's going to not allow me to be a porn star. Because it's who I am. No one wants to see that on TV. So just because I want it doesn't mean that I can go get it. Just because I dream about it doesn't mean anything. Everybody else talks about follow your dream. I'm all for following your dream if it's practical. And you can follow your dream, which we're going to get into in a minute, a lot safer. Something I wish I would have thought about years ago when I was doing the full-time trapping. So just because you dream about it and you fantasize it and you want people to know that you're a professional trapper, guys, that is not a reason to get into professional trapping. Now, the reality of being a full-time trapper right now, we'll just take right now for an existence. Say last year you're getting $25 for coon. This year you're getting $9, $10, or $12 for coon. Your business model just lost half of its money if you're a coon trapper. There's nothing you can do about that. Absolutely nothing you can do about that. That is part of the reality of being a fur trapper. Now, when I started, or even more, if you go back to the 80s and late 70s when the big fur boom was on, fur was really high and the dollar was worth a whole lot more compared to the labor and everything else. So when you read all this stuff about the 80s, you have to make a practical, logical understanding that the money is not the same as it was in the 70s and 80s. If we have a $100 fox, and in the 70s you had a $100 fox, when you take inflation into account, that's a $300 fox. That's what they were basically catching, a $300 fox. Raccoons were $100. Some of the bobcats were $1,000. Muskrats were, you know, $5 and $6, so that means they were $15 apiece. But the cost of living for those guys back then was minimal. Gas was 50, 60 cents. Food was extremely cheap compared to now. So you've got to take all this into context, because it is a reality, no matter what the fantasy says, that if you're going to make a decision, you've got to know what that is. And then the other, you know, you can't control the fur market. You can't control buyers. You can't control trap thieves. You can't control competition. You can't do any of that. So you're being a fur trapper, you're at the mercy of a lot of stuff that you don't control. If you're going to be a fur trapper today, and solely a fur trapper, there's no way that I believe in reality over a course of 10 years that you're going to be driving a new truck or living in a $300,000 house or have the smartphones and the extra cable bills and the expensive internet bills and all that. The money just does not work out. Now, we can play with numbers where you can make a very good wage at trapping. Very good wage at trapping. But trapping's only seasonal. So the reality of that means you've got to catch enough, and depending on where you're at and what you're going to be doing, in 4 to 6 months to be enough to last you for a whole year. That's a hard thing to do. You know, it's not always as simple as just catching more coon or catching more bobcats, because you're still going to have bills like everybody else. Just because you're a professional trapper, life does not change for you at all. You still have automobiles that break down. You still have insurance costs. What would happen if this was the middle of winter right now and I was totally living off fur money and I broke my ribs like I've got right now? I'd be screwed. You know, I'm sure I would try to suck up and do a little bit, but it wouldn't be enough to make up for not being hurt. That's just the reality of being trapping. You know, if you're going to be a full-time trapper all the way around, you're going to have to seriously downsize your life. And I'm talking cheap house, cheap cars. Your money goes into your profession as far as traps and education and stuff like that. When you make big licks of money, which you definitely will being a professional trapper if you've got your skills down right, you save part of that money for the times that you're not going to have those big licks of money just to get by. But if you're going to be a full-time fur trapper, I promise you, you're going to be on the lower scale of lifestyle for a long time. Fur is a very dangerous thing to hook yourself to. I've done it. It is. If you got a wife or a girlfriend, I'm telling you, it's going to be stressful. So you just need to keep all that in mind. Life does not change just because you're trapping. Because what happens if your wife gets sick and you just got out to New Mexico to cat trap for $400 cats? Or if your parents get sick or something like that, you got to come back. You got to eat all that expense going there and back with no production involved with that. Now, you may be thinking, Clint's being awful negative today. I'm not being negative, guys. It's just a reality. Because to me, it's really cool when you do it anyway and you figure out a way to make it work. And that's kind of what we're going to be going into from the rest of this thing. Now, when I got started being a full-time trapper about 16, 17 years ago, and I just went cold turkey and went trapping, the money during those winter wasn't that bad, even though we had low fur prices. But it wasn't enough to keep it going. So what did I do? I do odd and end jobs. I bush hogged. I've been a butcher. I've worked for a landscaping company. I grew a truck garden. I've done all these different things. We have rock. They buy rocks around here to send around the rest of the country to build houses. I picked up rocks and sold them. I've done all kind of things to make ends meet during that time. There was that's just the way it was. If not, you're going to be eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with no peanut butter and no sandwich if you run that out too hard. But the lesson that I've learned over these years is, when I look back on it and after talking to a lot of different guys about business and about their trapping business and stuff like that, if you want to be a full-time fur trapper, I'm going to give you a formula that'll make it a whole lot easier for you. A whole lot easier than it was for me. Plan on running hard in the wintertime. Take advantage of seasonal jobs in the summertime. Whether that be a seasonal business or whether that be a seasonal job. Because most people don't want seasonal jobs, they want full-time jobs. And a lot of the seasonal jobs, through tips and different things like that, especially if it's tourism based, you make a lot more money per day in the summer and fall and spring than you do if you have a job that goes year round. I mean, one of the things I did was, I was a river guide at a koi, and those big rubber boats taking people down the down the river. You know, you guide them. Well, you get like $40 a trip from the company, but then you would get tips at the other side. I was making way more money doing that and had a good time doing it than I could at a job. But it only lasts for about 3.5 months. You know, when I was in the pool business, what I should have done is had a different revenue stream outside of trapping where I kept doing liners and opening and closings because that's very seasonal. I didn't have all the risk of building swimming pools like I was doing. I could make plenty of money to have a big enough nest egg at the end of the summer if I lived frugally that I could not be in such a panic on having traps with fur in them everywhere you looked. Because no matter how stressed you get when you're being a full-time trapper, that does not make your trapping any better. So my advice to anybody that wants to be a full-time trapper, one, you got to drop your ego, you got to drop the fantasy, and you got to think of the reality of it. Money makes the world go round, whether we like it or not. You know, anybody that says money doesn't buy happiness is a rich person because it doesn't mean anything to them. Money absolutely can buy happiness. If you're hungry and you got some money, you can go eat. It will make you happy. If you need money to pay your house bill and you got money, it will make you happy. I promise you that. So don't fall for that big cultural lie we've all been told. You need to know what your lifestyle that you're looking for realistically should be. And are you trying to make $30,000 a year, $50,000, $100,000, whatever it is, and then you've got to be able to do a somewhat of a business plan that's going to back that up, and it's got to be based on real numbers. And if you can make the numbers work and it's based in reality and not fantasy or ego, then I say give it a shot. You know, it's all up to you. But having a second revenue stream, like if I was getting into this right now because of, you know, my big hobby right now is permaculture, and I've talked about it before. I can truck farm and make $20,000 to $40,000 a year out of my yard. Just out of my yard. If I had another acre and I went to see a community supported agricultural side, within 5 years I could be making $100,000 based off of the numbers that are real between vegetables and fruit that I could grow in the summertime that's extremely seasonal, and then I would have all winter to go trap. But I'd have two revenue streams. If you're someone that's tourist based, you know, look into those jobs because a lot of times they make really good money. It could be construction. It could be cutting yards, have your own yard business. It could be guiding people fishing if you're really good at that. It could be all, you know, guiding people turkey hunting in the summer. Whatever it is, and you can have two or three of these smaller things that equal up to a bunch of income at the end of the year. Revenue streams is what you need to be looking at, even in your trapping. Instead of all, you know, and this is one of the difference between an employee, a business owner, and an entrepreneur. But you got an employee just has one revenue stream, and he may have a little bit on the side here and there. But you're basing everything off of one thing. You get a paycheck every Friday or every other week. To me, that's dangerous. I wouldn't like that for nothing. But if you're an employee now, that's kind of the way you look at it. What is my hours worth? What is this worth? What is that worth? When you're going to go full-time, your hourly pay rate sucks, especially when you get started. I mean, it's going to absolutely suck. But you can make the money. You just got to change how you view things. If you want to be a full-time trapper bad enough, you can work enough hours that's productive to make money and get along just fine. But if you think you're going to do it in 40 hours, guys, I don't know of any business owner or entrepreneur that works 40 hours a week. I don't even know where that number comes from. I can't imagine being that way. But that's the way that I view my business. I mean, that's just the way that it is. But having a different revenue stream, And there's all kind of things out there that you can be very creative about. There are businesses in the summertime that go around and pick up dog poop out of people's yards, and they make $40,000 and $50,000. They just have a route like a paperboy. Now, that may not be the funnest thing in the world, but if you could make a living or part of a living off of picking up dog poop, as creative as trappers are, you can figure something else out. I don't know what the cost of liners are now for pools. I don't know what you know, because I haven't done that in so long. But I could make $1,000 a day by myself putting in pool liners. And then you'd have all winter to go trapping. Now, if you're thinking that's not a professional trapper, I guarantee you your ego is tapping you on your shoulder right now. You've got to have other revenue streams besides fur. Because if you don't, you're going to get in trouble. That I promise you. You don't want to go down that road. You can get very creative in what these revenue streams are. They may be inside the trapping industry. I've got revenue streams from fur. I've got revenue streams from control. I've got revenue streams from teaching instruction. I've got revenue from teaching schools. I've got revenue from lure. I've got revenue from t-shirts. I've got revenue from DVDs. I've got revenue from books. That's 8 different revenue streams out of the trapping industry that allow me to go do the trapping that I want to do. If you're gonna go full time, revenue streams are the key, not how much you make on a job or how much you make on a fur check, because a fur check is so undependable. And I know there's a lot of guys that hear these numbers out in Nevada where these guys are making $60,000 and $80,000 cat trapping, and they're probably spending $25,000 on expenses. You've got guys that catch numbers are just hard to comprehend, like Phil Brown and guys like that. Met a guy in Iowa that catches 3,500 coon. When you're catching those numbers and on that volume, you can probably pull it off. But those guys are like the NFL. There ain't many of them. I can tell you, at 46 years old, I don't want to go do what I did 15 years ago. I don't think physically I could hold up to it. I really don't. And that's another thing that you got to think about. With just having a single revenue stream being fur, what are you going to do as you age? As you can't move quite as quick. You can't get down the creek bank quite as easy. When you get hurt, it takes you longer to heal. What are you going to do as you get older and your body starts slowing down? If trapping is your only revenue stream, I mean, that's something you've got to think about, because that's reality. Now, lures, when I get to where I can't trap as much as I do right now, I can physically make lure. I mean, it's not that labor intensive. It'd probably be a lot slower. I couldn't move as, tonnage around the meat and stuff like that as I can do now, but I can still do that. As I was getting older, I could still put in pool liners. You know, I'm telling you guys, the way the food, and most guys that are into trapping are into the outdoors and they're into the natural things. Listen to what I'm getting ready to say. I just got an email from a friend down in Alabama who got an email from another friend from somebody that my friend knows. I know that gets kind of confusing. He just sold live weight cows for over $5 a pound. A year ago, it was a little over $1 a pound, live weight wholesale. Food is getting very, very, very expensive. Because that if ground beef is five something wholesale live weight, what's hamburger gonna be? $9 a pound, $10 a pound, stuff like that. As the food keeps getting more expensive, it gives guys an opportunity to make a lot of money with a garden, with fruit, with pecans, with different things like that. If you don't know how to garden, if you figured out how to trap, you can figure out how to garden. But with a truck farm, the way local eating and stuff is now, that is a perfect fit for a professional trapper. Because you, once trapping season's over with, you get a little bit of break, then you move on into the gardening side or planting fruit or whatever you're going to be doing. You learn how to spread that out. You can make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 off just an acre of ground if you do it right. And I don't try to copy a farmer in a big tractor. You know, you need to look into market gardening, permaculture, and food forest, and different things like that. But as the food gets more expensive, someone that's got the time period, because if you've got a job working 8 to 5, are you really going to have enough time to do a big enough garden to sell excess? Probably not. But if you're trapping full time, you could roll right into that and then have a whole new revenue stream right behind it, and then you go back into trapping. And if someone doesn't think that that's full-time trapping, then you're crazy, because people don't trap year-round unless they're in control trapping. And with the way the dollar is and the way the expenses are and what the fur's worth, it's just not realistic to think that you're going to make it totally off of fur. And I know that's probably busting a lot of bubbles out there, but it's just a reality. Now, if you want to have trapping-related jobs, and I'm going to say this, and this is coming strictly from me being 100% honest. If I wasn't doing what I was doing today, I would have another revenue stream that was not connected to trapping at all. For one, it gives me redundancy on money. If one industry crashes for whatever reason, it's not all intertwined the way it is right now. Because, I mean, I can tell you right now, what I'm working on is having a edible food forest nursery where all these weird plants that I grow, I can sell. You know why? Because we have mimosa trees, silk trees down here. I can go dig them up in the road ditch and sell them for $25. Dude, that's printing money right there. That's drug money. But people, they don't grow like weeds like they do here. They want them for nitrogen fixing trees. I can propagate certain things. I can take enough propagation off 50 blueberries to sell 300 blueberry bushes at $18 a piece. You know what it costs me to get those propagation off my blueberry bushes? Pennies on the dollar. Drug money. That's the type of stuff you need to be looking for. Not minimum wage, not this, not you need to be thinking like an entrepreneur where you're going after quick chunks of money for revenue streams. And that's the reason I'm going to be doing the nursery. Because you never know what law is going to be passed or whatever. It's just redundancy is all it is. It doesn't mean I like trapping any less. It doesn't mean that you like trapping any less because you do something else. I think it's just a smarter way for a human being to protect herself if one thing falls down or another. Now, saying that, I've already said this in some past episodes. You need to have a business of some sort, regardless if it's in trapping or not. You need to do that because people lose their jobs, the economy goes up and down, the stock market is going to crash again. I mean, just look at the numbers and off the way we're growing. It's going to correct. And when that happens, people lose jobs. So you need to have a backup plan of a backup business of some kind. And it needs to be something that's profitable that you do that with. But having those revenue streams is the biggest key to making it as a modern day fur trapper. Now, if you're going to do it on the trapping side, you can look at ADC. There's a lot of money to be made in ADC. We do very well on the predator side. But I can tell you from talking to a lot of ADC guys, there's a whole lot of bragging and a whole lot of bullshit that goes on in that side of the industry, just like there is in the fur trapping. You know, people running 900 cages a day and this, that, and the other, and they're making $50,000 a month. And I'm sure there's probably a few out there, just like the NFL players, that are pulling that off. But not most people. ADC, even in Chattanooga, there's all kind of ADC companies. Competition, just because you spread that pie out a little bit, is going to hurt somebody. No matter how good you are, that's just a fact. The ADC market is getting somewhat saturated. There's ADC people everywhere. Some professional, some not professional. It's irrelevant. They're still going to get business. Some business anyway. And it's not the money that I think a lot of guys are bragging about. Because when someone tells me they're running so many cages a day and catching so many coon, I can go, okay, well, in 14 hours, you're going to run so many cages. That means you're looking at a brand new cage every 16 seconds. That's not realistic. You know, if the money you're talking about, then a lot of guys are talking about ADC, everybody be making $500,000 to $1 million, $500,000 to $1 million, just because of the sheer volume. I think a lot of it's just BS. You can make a good sideline money from ADC, but it's been going on long enough where the first guys getting in it probably got most of that cream, and they've already got such a big market share, it's harder to get into. So if you're thinking of the ADC, be smart about it. Maybe if you're going to do the ADC, you need to look at doing the pest control at the same time. Doing something to get you that extra revenue stream. But ADC is definitely viable. If you happen to be in a place that doesn't have a lot of ADC people and there's a lot of need, you can make a lot of money. But it's not the easy money that I think a lot of the ADC guys portray. That's just my personal opinion, because I know a lot of them. And I'm talking, you know, bats and moles and raccoons and squirrels and all that type stuff. You know, when you do the jobs, I do think you make money, but the expenses on that's pretty high. So you need to think about that. But think of a different revenue stream, and I recommend outside of trapping, in the summer months where you can make a lot of money really quick, and then you can go into trapping. Your life will mellow out at that point. Because do you really want to be in the summertime watching your bank account dwindle as normal everyday expenses just eat it away, and you got to wait on the next fur sale? Are you waiting on your check from NAFTA to come and they only sold 10% of what you sent them? I mean, the reality of the stress of that's pretty bad. It gets worse if you got a family you're trying to, you know, feed and clothe and house and everything like that. But if you had a different income stream, you can roll through it a whole lot easier. And you will enjoy the trapping more if you don't do it every single day. When I was doing beaver control, I did it for 10 months out of the year. By the time month 8 came, I didn't want to see another beaver. I didn't want to set another 330 or a foothold trap. I was burnt. Now, if I was to do that 6 months on and 6 months off, I'd have a couple of months to recuperate and have 4 months to get excited about it again. Then I could go and do exactly what I was supposed to do, which is hammer down on. But if you do it all the time, you start getting just lazy about it. That's just human nature. Nothing you can do about it. You need to forget. Wait a minute. I can't read my own writing here. Hold up 1 second. You need to forget about competition, and you need to forget about what other people are saying. If you start doing good in trapping, you're going to have to start dealing with haters and internet snipers and all that type stuff that's going to do everything they can to make you out to a liar and this, that, and the other. They're sad people that don't really do anything, and they just want people to think they do, so they tear down other people. That's something you're going to have to deal with. If you start becoming a professional trapper and people start knowing who you are, you're just going to have to let it go, because they're really not doing anything anyway. And you don't ever want to make decisions based off what the internet snipers are going to say, because it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to try to tear you down, and you need to just ignore them. I don't even look at Trapper Man anymore, just because it's depressing to see that many people fighting all the time. Don't even go on there. Don't want that in my mind. Don't want all that negativity around me. If you've got people around you that are negative and you're going to try to make a full-time living at this, and they're always, you know, just always bringing every... I mean, you know the guys. You walk in a room and just suck the sunshine right out of it. Everything's bad. Everything's going downhill. It's not going to work. You're going to get screwed. Everybody's out to get you. You need to get away from those people, away from them, because all they're going to do is get you in that funk, and when you get in the funk, you're not going to be able to do what you need to do out on the trap line. Okay, I do want to cover something really quickly: an employee, a business, and an entrepreneur. employee, and I've said this before, trades time for money. And most employees stay busy, but they're not that productive. And if you're being honest with yourself and you're an employee, you'd have to go, yeah, that's probably true. A business owner is someone that runs a business. They've got a product they're selling or a service they're selling or whatever. And if you're going to be a full-time trapper, the business you're either in is going to have to do with products or services rendered. Even if it's fur, it's the same thing, guys. Business is business. But they don't really get outside the scope of things. And a lot of people are good business owners, but they're terrible at being an entrepreneur. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, which is what I kind of consider myself, you see opportunities everywhere and you figure out a way to take advantage of it. If a county's starting to get flooding, you start working on finding out who you need so you can get paid to fix the beaver problem. If the deer hunters are getting more responsive to coyotes eating their deer, then you need to figure out how to get closer to the deer people. That's what an entrepreneur does. Businesses kind of have a business model and they just kind of roll with it. They don't like change, they don't like doing things different. But that's the way they do it. And some people are more set up to be a business owner, like an ADC business owner. They just do the job. But as an entrepreneur, a fur trapper is going to have to be closer to that entrepreneur side to be able to take advantages of different things like that. An entrepreneur hears someone say that, you know, think about making a raccoon lure with only the male buttholes to try this for ADC. Well, you're figuring out how to get those buttholes so you can make some money on that. It's an opportunity that showed itself to you. So you've got to be able to render that. But the difference between an employee and a business owner and an entrepreneur, where a lot of people get in trouble, a lot of guys that I've mistakenly talked into going full time, is they confuse busyness with production. You can be busy all day and get nothing done. As a business owner, especially an entrepreneur, production, bringing in income, or something that's going to bring you income down the road, that's what you work on. Busyness doesn't matter. Because you can go out and be busy all day long and not produce anything. It's real easy to do. It's human nature to piddle. So you've got to keep that in mind. Or, you know, if you're an employee, you've got to really start thinking about it in a different manner instead of hours or time. If you're a business owner, maybe you need to start thinking about how can I study it and be a little bit better at being an entrepreneur so I can be mobile and take advantage of things when the market tells me that there's a need to be met. And an entrepreneur, by nature, will start stuff and not want to finish it because they're idea people. They get really turned on by new concepts. You know, that's one of my faults right there. I can come up with a business plan in a minute, but I don't know if I want to follow it all the way through. So you got to kind of understand where you are and what you need to be doing. And you, going back to the permaculture thing, one of the things about permaculture when it comes to gardening or farming is you stack different things. Now, I'm going to give you an example of me going to Texas. Now, I may have given this example before. But this is, you've got to be able to stack revenue on what you're doing if you're going to be a full-time trapper. Okay, when I go to Texas and catch a lot of cats and coyotes and coon, that's one revenue stream. The second revenue stream is that I'm getting paid by that ranch to do that. So it's like I'm now double dipping. When I made the cat collector video, now I've got three revenue streams that's going to pay me for years off the time that I did at that particular time. I'm also testing lures, seeing which ones go and don't go, and which ones are viable and which ones are not viable. So that's another one right there. I'm also teaching a school, which is another revenue stream while I'm down in Texas. I could give personal instructions on top of that. That would be six revenue streams for 1 month in Texas. I'm shooting video for YouTube and Wolfer Nation to reach out and draw more customers for my lure and DVDs. That's seven revenue streams now that I'm doing in Texas. I could be shooting commercials. or something for trapping TV, which is going to get me in front of more people to hopefully make more sales somewhere down the road. That's 8 revenue streams off one trip in Texas. Now, if someone just goes down to Texas and catches fur and comes home, can you see the difference of what's happening on income from one to the other? Both are trapping. Both could be professional trappers. One's making a whole lot more money than the other one. Both could be working the same amount. But you got to stack what you're doing at all times. If you're really good at raccoon, why not take people on your line when you're raccoon hunting or trapping? If you're good at coyotes, people want to learn coyotes. You come up with a better way to do something. You market yourself. Now, not only are you selling the fur, you're selling your time as you catch the fur. So you're stacking things on that. You could be trying out new lure. You could be shooting stuff for YouTube. You could be working on a book in the evenings. But that 24-hour time period, you're working on several revenue streams at one time. And for guys that are employees, that's really hard to get a grasp on, because I've talked to too many. You know, it's they're just doing one thing because they're thinking like an employee, where an entrepreneur is going to be thinking like an entrepreneur and trying to stack as many functions and revenue streams into a time period that he can. I've been in Texas and sold snares to ranchers. That's another revenue stream. I've sold it to the shops down there. That's another revenue stream. I mean, I could keep going. You know, meat market, another revenue stream. Well, that's 10 or 11 right there off of 1 month. And some of those, like the DVD and the YouTube videos and trapping TV, I will be getting revenue off of those for the next 10 years. That's powerful stuff right there if you really latch on to what that is. And if you're one of those guys that's sitting back going, yeah, but I just want to be a trapper. Well, you can sit back and just want to be a trapper, but you're going to be poor. And if poor is what you want, knock yourself out. It only makes smart business to jack up as many revenue streams as you can. So find something in the summer that's a revenue stream outside of trapping, and then find ways to stack revenue streams when you're inside of trapping. Now, I'm going to say something about DVDs. And this may roll right off of you because I make DVDs, and you may be thinking this is trying to not get you to make a DVD. I really don't care if you make a DVD or not. It's not going to affect my DVD sales one bit. But I will say this about DVDs. If you're going to make one, you get one shot at it. So it better be a good one. Because right now, Gerald Smith has got 260-something DVDs in his catalog. Most of those out there, guys, do not sell 300 copies total a year. So the money that most people think's in DVDs is not. Now, if you do all the work and you build up people's trust, and they know if you put a DVD out, it's a good one, and they're going to learn something from it, they're going to make more money, and it's going to be entertaining, they will buy your next one. If you just put a DVD out, this is my way of trapping, and it's different because I move my trap over here instead of over here, and I dig my hole this way. Guys, that's been done 16,000 different ways. No one cares. And if you put a video out like that, you'll get some sales initially, but they're not going to buy anything else that you put out because they're going to feel like you misled them, especially if you really blow the DVD up. So if you're going to make DVDs, I suggest they be very specific, like the portable pocket one was, or the dirt hole one that I've got, or the flat set one I've got. They know exactly what it is, and I get very in-depth on it. It's not a general go watch Clint trapping thing like my year-long Blitzkrieg is, where I go all over the country. It needs to be specific. And the reason I'm telling you that, if you want to do a DVD, do a DVD. You need to learn how to work the camera. You need to learn how to work the editing. But more than that, you've got to give the customer more than he wanted, or you're going to be screwed on your next sales. And if you don't have something that's going to make you stand out away from everybody else to put a DVD out. And I mean seriously stand out. Don't put one out until you've got something that's going to rock people's world or make their trapping so much better. Because if you just sling one out there because you think you're going to make all this money, one, you're not going to make the money, and two, you're not going to get repeat customers. Not a very good business model. But you can take that for what it's worth. You can get into the lure side of stuff. It only took me about 10 years before I started making any real money with lures. 10 years. Now think about that. 10 years. For the first 5 or 6, nothing really. You might make a couple $100 here and there. No one's really ordering it online. You're not going to be making a whole lot. But if you're willing to stick it out, you can eventually down the road get enough customers and people have faith in what you're putting out, if it's good stuff, to make money in lures. If you're going to try instruction or you're going to try schools, knock yourself out. But it better be good. Because with social media now, if it's not, you're not going to have customers going back, and your reputation is not going to be what you need it to be if you do come up with the best thing in the world, because you've already screwed it over. So you got to think about that. But revenue streams are great. Inside of trapping, excellent. You have products. And I'm going to say something else about inside of the trapping industry. Buying and reselling supplies is not a money maker. Period. Unless you get to the volume of Tim Caven, Sterling, F&T, Schmitz, Cumberland, stuff like that. Those guys have got probably $1 million to $3 million in inventory at any one time on their books. But if you go out and you buy something and you turn around and resell it for 20, the cash flow gets so screwed up and upside down, all you're doing is trading money. Trading money. Like a t-shirt. I make about $5 on t-shirts when I go to a convention. I don't make money on t-shirts. Not that I ever see, because if I sell more extra larges and more mediums and 2Xs and the way it always works out, I turn around and order 100 more t-shirts that cost me more just to resupply the inventory. So there's really no cash flow in there. On paper, it's going to show a profit, but it's not something you really get to spend, per se. And guys that are selling products at 20 and 30% markup, when you take into account the conventions, I mean, when I went to Michigan, guys, you got to know this if you're going to try to make that a revenue stream. I had $700 in fuel. I had $800 in motel rooms. I had $900 in tables. I had to eat, so I'm not even going to count food. So I had to sell that much supplies above what it cost me to make before I started making a profit. And if you're trying to do that on 20% or 30% and you're just changing money all the time, you're not going to get anywhere. If the people that produce stuff make the money. So if you're going to try to get in the trapping supply side, you need to have some of your own things that you produce or get made that you're the base ground distributor on. Then you can make some money. But if you think you're going to go buy some dog proofs and some 550s and sell them, you're just not going to make any money. And if you really truly run the numbers, you'll see that. You might sell $30,000 of supplies out of Nationals. Think about that, $30,000. But after you run your expenses all the way up there and back, if you made $3,000, you're doing good. But you've risked all that inventory to make $3,000. So there's something to keep in mind on what you're doing. Because like I said, I'm being very open and honest about what it's like to make it. If you're going to be a professional trapper, you've got to be proactive and reactive all at the same time. You've got to go make things happen. If you can figure out how to get someone to help you pay for the fuel or pay you for a job or put you up so you don't have to pay motels room, that's proactive. If you know there's better fur quality and quantity in another area, so you're going to have to take a month and go down there and catch them, that's being very proactive. You also have to be very reactive. What happens if you land in an area with a trapper that's as good or better than you and he's kicking your butt. You've got to figure out either to stay and fight it out or go somewhere else. What if the trap thieves are bad? What if the market crashes? What if part of the market crashes? How are you going to react to that? You got to be able to do it on a dime. You need to be able to see what's going on, critical think about it, think about your options, and make the best option possible on a dime. Because to make it as a fur trapper, you're kind of like a guerrilla fighter. You know, you've got all this stuff out there that looks monumental in front of you, and you've got to figure out how to jab and step to the left and go around and go under and figure out how to go in at night and do all this type of stuff. You've got to be very mobile and not set in one way. So if you just want to be a coyote trapper and the coyote market tanks, you got to be a muskrat or a coon trapper or something at the flip of a coin. You got to be able to be very active when you come to that. Now, after saying all that, being a professional trapper, if you do it right, is a great way of life, as long as you don't allow it to consume you. Because it's very easy to let anything consume you. And when it consumes you, it's really cool for a couple of years, and then it starts getting very monotonous. But I would not trade being a full-time trapper for all those years where it was just for fur for anything, because it taught me so much. I got to learn so much. I got to see all these different places. I got to meet all these cool people. I got to see wildlife that most people will never see. I got to enjoy everything about it, and I did. I enjoyed it. But if you let it consume you and you don't have anything else to do except trap, you're going to end up being a miserable old person, and you don't want to be that guy. You need to have an outside interest besides just trapping. And that's where I think that second revenue stream ought to be something outside the trapping industry. That way, when the season starts, you're fresh, you're excited, you've been planning on it, you're ready to go, and all you're waiting is for the gun to go off when your season starts. That's the way trapping ought to be. But if it's a year-round thing and you're trying to fit in your fur trapping in between ADC and this, that, and the other, you just get burnt. And most guys are never going to tell you that. That's just the honest to God. You will get burnt. Because I've been in Texas for 60 days. And let me tell you, the first 3 or 4 weeks, it's really cool. About the last 2 weeks, all I want to do is get out of Texas. Yeah, we're still catching cats and coons and coyotes and hogs and javelinas and dodging illegals and going through checkpoints and eating good Mexican food and all that. But you just get burnt. You mentally get burnt. And you physically get burnt, for that matter. But it's enjoyable if you can schedule it to where you're having something new all the time. And you'll love the trapping so much better. Especially if you're not 100% dependent on that for all your money. And when it comes to a business, guys, what you catch is irrelevant. You can catch 3,000 coon, and someone to catch 1,000 coon can make way more money than you. The only thing in business that counts is net. The only thing that counts at the end of the season is not how many animals you caught, how much money you got to put in your pocket. And when you're going full-time, it is a business, and you have to look at it just like any other business. You've got to think about your expenses. You've got to understand that 100%. Every time you turn on that truck, it's costing you money. Every time you buy a trap, it's costing you money. Every time you're in a motel room or you're doing this or that or fix the boat, it's costing you money. Every time you spend that dollar, you just don't have to make that dollar back. You got to make twice that much to have any profit over what you just made. And that's just a reality of life. Net is all that counts. So if you're going to be a full-time trapper, the mindset is extremely different than a hobby trapper. A hobby trapper does it because he just wants to. He's not going to be spending tremendous amount of time on it. It could be on vacation. It could be after work. It could be on the weekends. So if he buys more traps than he needs and more gadgets than he can use and spends more on gas and this, that, and the other, it's a hobby. Just like deer hunting. it doesn't really matter. But from a professional point of view, it makes a big difference. Guys that catch 1,000 coon out of a canoe make way more money than guys that catch 1,000 coon out of a truck. Is it more convenient in the truck? Yep. Is it more profitable? Nope. And you can, in a canoe, you know, you can use rechargeable batteries. You can have a little trolling motor on it. You could use, they got little mud motors now you can put on, like Golden Hawks. All that stuff has to be put in effect. What's the gas mileage on your truck? How much do you have to repair that truck? How often are you getting stuck? All these things have to be brought into reality on what it is. Because if you can go have a record catch and be broke. So you've got to quit thinking about being a professional trapper where I caught 1,000 raccoons. Well, that's the way a hobby trapper looks at it. A professional trapper is, I made so much money this week per day, per month, we're good or we're not good. That's just the cold, hard truth. So a professional trapper may not catch as much on a daily basis as a hobby trapper because that professional trapper is really watching his expenses. Everything's easier the more money you throw at it. But the more money you throw at it means the less money you've got at the end. And you've got to really think that in consideration. Trapping with a partner as a professional trapper, unless y'all two together can catch more fur than you could as a single person, you're losing money. Let me say that again. If you're with a partner and your partner and you cannot catch more fur together than you can as an individual, you're losing money. Even when you count expenses and everything else like that. And that's very hard to do because you're going to be spending time together, and how much better is it really? So if someone went with a partner and caught 1,000 coons, someone didn't go with a partner and caught 600 coons, the guy without the partner is going to obviously make more money than the guy with a partner, because they're splitting 500 coons and he's made 600 coons. If you see what I'm saying. Net is the only thing that counts, not the catch. Glory pictures are nice. That's not what pays the bills. Because when you're going full time, that's the only thing that counts, guys. I really suggest that everybody starts, if you want to be a professional, get into it slowly. And I know that goes against the American culture 100%. Everybody wants it now. I want it now. You need to see if you're really set up to do it. Because if you can't make a two-week vacation trip pay, you're probably not going to make a six-month trapping season pay. Because more's going to happen in that 6 months. And you're probably not going to be moving around as much. So if you can go to somewhere there's a lot of cream and you can't make it pay, maybe it's best just to keep it as a good sideline income to whatever you're doing outside of trapping. But start slowly. And another thing about trapping, guys, if it's going to be a business, it's all about choices. What do you choose to do? And what have you chosen not to do? When I got into the predator control side, I did not know how to sell to very rich deer owners. I did not know how to market. I did not know how the internet worked. I did not know a lot of things that I know now. And the difference, and people always go, well, why does Clint seem to make more money than other people? We've made different choices. I chose to study business. Most trappers do not choose to do that. I've chosen to study marketing and put it to practice. Most trappers have chosen not to. I've chosen to write articles and learn how to write. Most trappers have not chosen to do that. I've chosen to understand the internet and harness the power of that thing, and most trappers have not. Most trappers are in this mindset of, I'll figure it out as I go, and this, that, and the other, and that's fine, except it's a lot longer and a lot harder. If you need to learn how to market whatever it is you're doing, you need to read a book a week about marketing. If you're trying to sell stuff online, you've got to know how that works. Just putting a website up does you no good whatsoever. You know, you need to study the business part of trapping more than you need to study the trapping, because the trapping is the easy part. Making it pay is the harder part, because it's not what you catch, it's what you keep. So if you want to be well known in trapping so you can sell DVDs and lure, you're going to have to write. If you choose to always say, I don't know how to write, and that's your answer, you're absolutely right, you don't know how to write, because you've chosen not to. If you make yourself write every day, you will get better at it, and you've made the choice to be a writer. If you don't know how to run a video camera, you just don't go, I don't know how to run a video camera. You choose to learn how to run a video camera, or you choose not to. But these choices are not by making choices, is the reason people are wherever they're at in their life at any one moment. If someone seems to, everything comes easy to them, you'll probably find out they made different choices than the other people that are trying to do what they're doing. And those choices are the biggest thing. If you choose not to take instruction because you just think that you can figure it out on your own, you probably will figure it out on your own, but by the time you do, you're going to be too old and too crippled to do anything about it. So that's a choice that I made. I went to O'Gorman's twice. I went to take instruction from Red, from the Leggetts, from Johnny Thorpe, from Red Edgman. I've talked to a lot of different guys on their lines. I've been with a lot of different guys. I've chosen to be a better trapper based off of other people's experience. Now, if a trapper doesn't want to go that route, it's going to be a lot tougher. If you think you know about business and you've never had a successful business, you don't know about business. If you think you know about marketing and you've never been successful at marketing, because here's what happens in trapping, especially if you're selling products. Someone comes up with a neat product, they automatically make the mistake that everybody wants what I've got. That's not true to start with. And then, how hard is it to manufacture and what is your actual profit on it? Most people don't know that either. Then they're going to put an ad in a magazine, and it's just like every other ad in the magazine, because people in the trapping industry have a propensity to copy everything. So it looks like everybody else's ad, so they don't get business that way. And then they market their fur the same way as everybody else does, and it doesn't work. And they wonder why they don't get ahead. You've got to choose different avenues. And I can tell you right now, if most people are doing it one way, that is not the way you want to do it. Whether it be in your trapping or your marketing of the trapping or anything like that, you've got to make choices that go against the herd most of the time, or you're going to be just like the herd. And most trappers don't make money with fur because they do what everybody else does. And as a professional trapper, and you do that, you're not professional very long. So you got to keep that in mind. Now I'm going to go ahead and close this up. Now this may have seemed very negative for some, but it's not. I promise you. It's just someone explaining to you what the realities of it is compared to what the fantasy of it is. Because I could have did this whole show on how easy it is to be a professional trapper. I guarantee you, with a calculator and numbers, I could have 15 people listening to this thing quit their job tomorrow. That wouldn't be that hard. What do coons bring? How many need to catch a day? How many need to catch a month? Oh, I can do that. Shoot, yeah, I can make money being a professional trapper. But that wouldn't be very honest over the long term. And I just want people to understand what this really means. Don't get caught and just dreaming about something, and then you go make a step without you realizing what it is, because it can be very stressful. Another thing, you know, to think about, what is this going to do to your wife and your kids if you don't make what you think you need to make and they have to change their lifestyle because the money's not there? I mean, you need to think about that. If you're planning on, if you're dreaming up state hopping all over the place, is your wife going to, you know, be with you when you start doing that? You need to think about such things. It's just the reality of life. If your wife's not going to support you, I promise you it ain't going to last. If you've got a good wife and one that supports whatever you do, and you think you're going to be away from home 6 months out of the year state hopping while she sits and does all the regular stuff, over time you're going to get in trouble with that. You need to keep that in mind. But if you do decide to be a full-time trapper,
and you want to make that jump to be a full-time trapper, in whatever puzzle way you put that together, enjoy the ride. That's all I can say is enjoy. It will be a ride. It will be highs like you've never felt, and it'll be lows like you've never felt. You know, I don't move very good in the mornings anymore from the abuse I put my body through, but I've earned those broke bones and dislocated joints and bruises and scrapes. I've earned every single one of them. The only one I didn't earn was breaking my chest on my van. That was just, I don't know what happened. But the other ones, I've earned it. And every one of them has got a story behind it. And every season, I get to see things and do things that I've never dreamed I would be able to see or do. I've seen places that most people never get to step foot on. I've met some amazing people trapping. Some of the landowners I've met have been billionaires and millionaires, and some of them, I don't think they made less money than me. The money was not the thing, but the people were amazing. Learning the difference between trapping in New Mexico and Tennessee or Texas or Louisiana, I mean, the memories and the stories that go along with that. The run-ins with the game wardens, the run-ins with the crazy local trappers. You know, the drama at the trapping conventions, the drama on the computer, all that stuff. And just enjoy the ride the best you can. But the biggest piece of advice I'm going to close with for anybody that wants to make a living in trapping or the trapping industry, do not believe your own hype. Do not take yourself too serious. If you take yourself too serious, you're going to fall. I take my business very serious. I do not take me serious at all. Most people think I make more money than I make, and I catch more fur than I catch. And if I started believing what everybody else believed, wherever they get that from, I'm going to start acting in a way that's not real, and before long it's going to come crashing down. Take your trapping serious, for sure. Take your business of it, trap for sure. Don't ever take yourself serious. Don't ever expect people need to treat you a certain way or know who you are or anything like that. You just be who you are, but you just happen to be very good at trapping or very successful at a trapping business. So don't believe your own hype and don't fall for your own ego. Don't fall for fantasies or anything like that. But if you do take the plunge, I promise you, you will not have a boring life. The highs and lows will be amazing. And when it's all said and done, what else is there, really? I mean, I'd much rather go through the lows I've had to go through in trapping than be at a factory for 30 years. Me, personally. Maybe you're the same way. I don't know. Maybe the security of that job is what you need. Could be. If so, man, rock on. But just some thoughts to think about being a full-time trapper. But whatever you do, guys, don't let the hard part of this or the negative part of that be the only thing that you think about. Because I could have just as easily, like I said, talked people into quitting tomorrow. But you need to know what you're getting into. So have a good week. And Dustin Drews from South Dakota will be with us next week. All righty. See y'all later.